This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Welcome back to The Lines Between Us, our year-long exploration of inequality in the Baltimore region. In the beginning of the series, we focused on housing, particularly the history and policies that caused Baltimore to be divided on racial lines. That part of the series drew a lot of response, and we heard some on the air. Then we turned to examining economic opportunity and income inequality. We looked at how having or not having social networks, transportation, job training, internships, children, and even an accent, how all that affects employment opportunities. So now we want, again, to take a few minutes to air some of your perspectives on these issues. One component of this series aims to continue the discussion after the broadcast ends. At the website linesbetweenus.org, we've created a Your Stories page so you can tell us about where you see inequality functioning in the Baltimore region. Today, we're going to share some of those stories. We'll hear from Terry Carlton. Terry attended the screening in early December of the film Race, The Power of an Illusion at the Enoch Pratt Free Library. He heard our panelists that night, Diane Bell McCoy, president and CEO of Associated Black Charities, Bishop Douglas Miles, organizer of Baltimore's Koinonia Baptist Church, and Michael Sarbanes, executive director of Baltimore City Public Schools Office of Engagement.
This economic time and place is where we either understand that we will begin to benefit all or we will begin to hurt all.
This society is not ready to have a real discussion about race. Not in Baltimore, not in Maryland, not in America. We're not ready to have a real non-emotional conversation about race.
There's a possibility of creating a city that comes together that actually is racially integrated and that has there is wealth formation that occurs as opposed to it being yet another chapter of exclusion on the basis of race. I think that's a real possibility.
Terry Carlton was concerned that discussions like this one that followed the screening were missing some voices that needed to be included but weren't because, he said, the discussions weren't taking place where they hit the people most affected.
We can't have meetings in the library. We got to have meetings on the street. We got to have meetings where the people need the help and going to get to y'all when y'all have meetings. Instead of you have professionals and stuff making statements and stuff, you need to have the people stand up in the middle of the auditorium and talk to the people, and then the people that are making conclusion need to answer your questions.
Nancy Murray also attended the film screening and panel discussion. Murray said the issues that the film brought up registered with her on a personal level. She wrote about her reflections in an article published in the Baltimore Post-Examiner called Racism is Alive and Well and Living in Baltimore. In the article, Murray wrote, quote, I have spent my entire adult life trying to recognize and unlearn the programmed racist reflexes in my own thoughts and behavior, but I have done it all on the down low, because to say out loud that I have racist thoughts and reflexes is to invite a hailstorm of judgment to rain down on me, close quote. On 88.1, this is The Lines Between Us on Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're hearing excerpts from listeners, your stories, and comments. We don't know the race of some of our commenters, and we don't necessarily embrace their views as our own. We got a lot of feedback about the February 15th episode of Lines, in which we examined income segregation and how it plays out in some of Baltimore's neighborhoods. In her answer to a question of the week which asked, can the middle class be saved, Kelly, a resident of Greater Baltimore, was quite candid in saying that she had low expectations. In her email, she wrote, quote, Guys, I wish that there would be better news on the horizon. Unfortunately, there is not. The heyday of the middle class was in the early 60s. When we talk about the middle class, money always comes to mind. But the biggest obstacles that the middle class has been facing is really about values. How does the individual, the family, choose? At the end, money cannot make one act better. It certainly is an important factor because being middle class comes with a decent home, school, good neighborhood. But the American middle class is fast declining despite some of them having a good amount of disposable income. Now, Baltimore is a special case. You can replace the middle class in Baltimore with the new current movement of more affluent whites moving in. In 5 years, blacks most likely will be a minority in Baltimore City. close quote, Kelly wrote. She said she sees the decline of the black middle class as 30 or 40 years ahead of the decline of the white middle class. She concluded, quote, the answer is there is no coming back for the black middle class in the city. They are being replaced by the white middle class of middle class values, which is still more healthy, close quote. But Flip Sasser says he sees a healthy mix of class and racial diversity in his neighborhood of Upper Fells Point. That's a big reason he likes where he lives and, in his words, wouldn't move anywhere fancier.
It's hard to ignore the fact that Baltimore is a segregated city. And living in Upper Fells is a way that I can sort of remind myself of that from time to time. So that rather than kind of hiding in one of these bastions of whiteness that we have in the city, Tent Hill, Fells Point, Canton, I can be reminded, I guess, of the fact that there are a whole lot, you know, that we're the minority in this city, really, that there's a whole lot of people who don't look like us or talk like us around us. And it's nice to be closer to that. I don't know. I love it here. It's an amazing city, and I think it's a city that needs help. And that's sort of why I stay here, I guess.
In the February 8th episode, we examined how accent and the way we speak could impact how we are viewed by others, in particular by employers. One of our guests, Dr. Kokava Zauditu Salasi, explained that part of her work at Coppin State University is alerting her students that the speech they're comfortable with might not serve them well.
Other places aren't going to be that non-judgmental about that speech environment, and it could end up being a hindrance for her going outside of the confines of 21216 West Baltimore.
A listener named Tim, who described himself as a white Baltimorean, wrote that he often doesn't understand what black Baltimoreans around him are saying. Tim wrote, quote, language is fluid, and in my experience, I have a harder time understanding black vernacular today than I did years ago. The guest correctly pointed out that the Coppin student who reverts to Ebonics will have a hard time thriving outside the 21216 zip if she wants to live in a world that does not understand it. I feel that the guest understood the liability of isolation inside speech patterns that may limit future choices for her students. In the world of careers and advancement, it is important to be able to communicate. Job candidates who cannot communicate are at a tremendous disadvantage, close quote. When it comes to job opportunities, listener John Irvine said he thinks more attention needs to be paid to government jobs expanding the middle class. In an email, John wrote, quote, your recent episode got me thinking. Everyone bemoans the lack of middle class job opportunities, and many others bemoan government spending. But I would think that government jobs, Social Security Administration, state government, etc., are one of the last best sources of old-school middle-class employment. The job security, benefits, living wages are generally much better than the private sector. Not sure what angle you could take on that, but it is not something much discussed, close quote. In the middle-class episode I mentioned earlier, we heard from Jennifer Arndt Robinson, who first bought in Patterson Park 12 years ago. She talked about new, higher-income residents moving into the neighborhood and having to make the choice to stay or move elsewhere when children were introduced in the picture.
People who came, maybe with the same intentions that I had, had kids and decided that it was time to move. And what we're seeing right now is a real baby boom in our neighborhood. It's really exciting. We have a year-old daughter, and we have several friends who have children, babies, and we've made the decision to stay, and they've made it too. And we all ask each other the question, you know, when somebody announces they're pregnant, are you staying?
Another Patterson Park resident, Joe, who was expecting his first child, said he thought that individuals who are not exposed to diverse groups of people may be missing out, and he doesn't want his child to grow up into one of those people. Joe wrote, quote, this year my wife and I are having our first child and are making the conscious decision to stay in the Patterson Park neighborhood. We know a number of new families which are making the same decision and feel comfortable raising our kids in such a friendly community. Both my wife and I attended private universities where many of the students did not have exposure to diverse environments, both culturally and economically. And we saw these students struggle with adapting to the change. Many of these students struggled with the new environment and fell victim to substance abuse and other more blue-collar issues that they were not exposed to early on. I feel that a great deal of our success came from our comparatively modest upbringing and our early exposure to issues which our more affluent classmates have not encountered before. After watching a number of friends drop out of school without finishing their degree, one of my greatest fears is raising a child in an affluent enclave and not sufficiently preparing them for the world, close quote. We've heard these listener stories. Now it's your turn. Visit the linesbetweenus.org website for a list of all the ways you can share your story with us and with each other. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of The Lines Between Us. I'm Sheila Cast. Quick break. Then former President of Mexico Vicente Fox on why we should legalize marijuana. Stay tuned to 88.1.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Lines Between Us, WYPR's year-long exploration of inequality in the Baltimore region. This is Maryland Morning senior producer Lawrence Lanahan. Now, join the conversation at facebook.com/thelinesbetweenus. Or tell us your story at linesbetweenus.org. The Lines Between Us is made possible by grants from Associated Black Charities, Cohen Opportunity Fund, Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, Baltimore Community Foundation, and Open Society Institute Baltimore, as well as support from members of the WYPR Board of Directors. I hope you'll join us again on Friday at 9 a.m. on 88.1 FM in the Baltimore region, and everywhere else, streaming live at WYPR.org. Have a great day.